Welcome to the 273rd episode of the Jamie Delaney Plant-Based Wellness Podcast. My name is Jamie Delaney, and I'm your host. I'm a plant-based cardiologist and endurance athlete living in Southwest Florida. Welcome. I'd like to start by extending heartfelt prayers and hopes for safety for all those people in California suffering from the wildfires. I know some of our favorite people out there are suffering. One of our favorite wineries, the Sherwins, it's a family-owned winery, and a friend out there, Donna, I don't think they necessarily listen to the podcast, but there's just such nice people, and their place was just burned to the ground, as so many others, and my heart goes out to them, as well as everybody else that's affected, and I hope for rain soon, so these fires can get under control. There will not be a California International Marathon, not only to COVID because of these wildfires, and that is of secondary importance. It's obviously the health and safety of the people there, but it's a sad event when more and more races are getting canceled by either these climate changes or viruses or whatever's happening in the world. It's just keeping people apart, and it's very, very sad. The Austin Swim Run is still on, the Odyssey race in the first part of November, so we're planning on going out for that unless anything changes. And there is a new kid in town, Sophie, the 9-week-old German puppy joined us last weekend, and she is a ball of fire. Happy to be around since we lost Samantha. So Gretchen now has a friend. Vinny the cat is actually very tolerant of her. He runs just fast enough to stay ahead of her, but everybody's participating in the exercise of Sophie. So we have stairs in our house, and it's been recommended that puppies don't use stairs for the first 4 to 5 months of their life because their joints are not, they're not together. They have a big gap where their bones come together, both in their elbows and their hips. And it's thought that that actually is a cause of hip degeneration and knee problems in dogs, especially large breeds. So she is getting carried up and down the steps. So she weighs in at 12 pounds, and I'm hitting a lot of steps, and I've noticed that even though I'm running about 40, 45 miles a week, the addition of Sophie to the steps has added a new dimension. So I've had some tired legs on occasion, not to mention a tired body from getting up in the night to make sure Sophie gets to go out when she needs to. But it's all fun, and she's growing, and she's healthy, and we're all really happy about it, and she's bringing a lot of smiles to my office. I have always had a dog in the office. And a lot of times people like to come to the office to see our puppies more than they like to come and see us perhaps. But, I think it's always great to put a smile on people's face, to have a dog there to pet. And certainly puppies are, bring smile to everybody. So a little puppy fur goes a long way in our yoga class. And, when people come, in for their appointments and even to nutrition class, she makes an appearance after, it's all said and done. So a lot of fun in the office, a lot of fun at home. Of course, she won't be running until she's about 9 months old, but, on the road, so to speak. But we're having lots of fun outside in the yard watching her grow. And of course, with puppies, you want to make sure that they have complete nutrition. And, again, I've made mention to a lot of the sites, a complete and balanced diet. And when people look at kibble, they assume that everything's in there, just like your cereal, breakfast cereal. You assume that when it says, 9 essential vitamins and minerals, it has everything you need. But the reality of it is, when you feed kibble, it's kind of sprayed on at the end, and a lot of the vitamins are synthetic because they kind of get burned up in the process of making the kibble. So we want to make sure that Sophie gets a complete and balanced diet with what she's eating. And, last week I saw people, they talked about zinc and, I heard mention of copper. And I thought, well, again, let's look at the plant-based diet and see, because the plant-based diet is always getting trashed for not being, a complete diet. And certainly I don't think most people in the United States sit down to dinner to make sure that they have a complete and balanced diet every meal to see whether or not they have all their minerals or could even name all the minerals that they might want. And you see advertisements for copper bracelets and copper bands on TV, but we actually need to take in the mineral copper. So where does it come from and how much do we need and do we need to worry about it? And the answer is no. If you eat a plate that is, colorful and you're eating enough calories, you're going to get enough of these vitamins and minerals that we don't have to count. And I think that's really, again, the bottom line always, look to make sure that you're eating a colorful plate, that you have your beans and your grains and your fruits, and everything's going to be okay. But just for instance, when we look at copper, copper is used in the body to metabolize in a lot of metabolic processes, whether it's to make enzymes or in the metabolic process of breaking down cholesterol or glucose. It also neutralizes free radicals, which are the byproducts of metabolism and oxidation. Copper is involved in making red blood cells, so it's involved in a lot of processes, but we don't need that much. We need 900 micrograms a day, the recommended daily allowance is. So how do we find that? So if I look just from our headline, the big kale. So kale is a whopping good source of copper. So it's another reason to get your 6 cups of greens. Greens in general are a good source of copper. So leafy greens, spinach, kale, Swiss chard can supply up to 33% of your needed copper a day. And most plant-based diets, you get a little bit here and a little bit there and it all adds up. But that's a big one. Again, just like zinc, chia seeds also are very plentiful in copper. Mushrooms, especially shiitake mushrooms, are a nice source of copper. Nuts and seeds, although we don't eat a lot, but a little sunflower seeds here, a little pumpkin seed there, a couple walnuts, you can get a little bit of copper. And what everybody likes is dark chocolate has copper in it. So, there was a lady came to my office and she was trying to convince me that all she needed to do was eat 7 pieces of healthy dark chocolate and she would be okay because it was cold pressed and it was made, really good. And that chocolate was good. And she was overweight and she had high blood pressure and she had all these things, but she felt good because she was eating her dark chocolate. And we all know that chocolate makes people feel better, so there's a great placebo effect, but there's also copper. But one way you can get to the copper aspect of dark chocolate is cacao powder, and it actually can supply 45% of your daily requirement for copper. So my breakfast in the morning contains a tablespoon to a tablespoon and a half of chia seeds, and I'll put about a tablespoon of cacao powder. Not because I'm looking for copper, because I'm looking for a little chocolate. And the cacao powder has antioxidants. It's low in fat. Gives me that little chocolate flavor in the morning because if you all remember back in the day before I was vegan, I liked chocolate cake. So it's my substitute chocolate cake in the morning. And then I put my mango and blueberries and cantaloupe and watermelon and anything else I can find. Dragon fruit I had this week. With that, it makes a great breakfast. So don't worry about not getting enough copper or not getting enough zinc while on a plant-based diet. We don't have to measure all these things. The other things people get worried about is their mineral content of their water, and should you be drinking smart water or, water with minerals. And I actually drink distilled water. And I have a distiller, the brand I use. I'm not sponsored, but it's Aqua Nui. It has a water feed into it. From the plumbing line, and then I fill up a container for my refrigerator. The distillation process takes away harmful bacteria and, it takes away everything. So you're basically left with just plain water. And I don't worry about getting minerals from water. I get my minerals from food, as we just talked about. So I'm more worried or want to get the toxins out, the people that are taking statins and then flushing them down their toilet and all the different other chemicals that come in city water as far as chlorine and other harmful things. I like to get out with the distiller. The other thing I just want to touch on, because it seems as no matter how many times people hear it, they get tripped up by it, is essential amino acids. What are essential amino acids? Are there good amino acids from plants versus good amino acids from animals? Do we need the protein? Is protein all created equal? Which do humans do best with? The 9 essential amino acids mean that we have to actually consume them, and amino acids are the building blocks of proteins. And the essential amino acids are part of proteins that we get easily in our food. Everything has all 9 essential amino acids. To be a complete protein, it has to have the same percentages of those 9 essential amino acids as skeletal muscle, human skeletal muscle. So mammal skeletal muscle, meaning animal skeletal muscle, is the closest thing as far as percentages of amino acids, those 9 essential, as human skeletal muscle. That's it. That's the bottom line. We don't need all 9 essential amino acids every time we take a bite. And every meal that we have, they accumulate out through the day, just like our zinc and copper does. So you can get them throughout the day. So you're going to get 9 essential amino acids in various percentage from a banana, a mango, the chia seeds, your kale at lunchtime, beans, rice, other vegetables. And, by the end of the day, you have the amount of 9 essential amino acids that you need. And the reality of it is there are some essential amino acids, such as the branched chain amino acids and methionine, that we don't really want a lot of because they actually have been associated with an increase in tumor necrosis factor and in the development of mTOR, which is an aging enzyme. So plants give us really the correct percentages of the 9 essential amino acids that provide a safe percentage for us. We are omnivores, and we do quite well on getting our 9 essential amino acids from plants. And you also have to remember, if somebody asks you, that the only way there's ever going to be an amino acid is if they're a plant. So if we destroyed all the plants in the world, we would cease to exist because we need the plants to fix nitrogen, and nitrogen is part of the structure of an amino acid. So in order to get an amino acid and to get a plant and to get a protein, we need to have plants in the plant food. So by eating the middleman, you're getting an accumulation of those 9 essential amino acids in skeletal muscle, but you don't need to get them that way. So we absorb them plentiful in our plant food. And again, if you get enough calories, you get enough protein. If you get enough protein, you get enough amino acids. If you get enough amino acids, you get enough essential amino acids, not to worry. So we don't have to count protein grams. We don't have to count micrograms of amino acids. It all works out. And our body uses things and breaks them down every day. And so the reality of it, most of the protein that we take in does not get broken down into amino acids that we use throughout the day, but we are breaking down continuous enzymes and muscle and various cell wall structures and other proteins to recycle them and make new proteins all the time. So our body's pretty smart. It goes back again. You can feed the body really bad for a long time before ill health starts to affect it. And that's, shown with protein, so eating a terrible diet, fast food diet, you're not going to be devoid of the essential amino acids. And certainly not eating a plant-based diet, you're not going to be missing essential amino acids. And you don't have to combine, it used to be people talked about combining, pasta with cheese or beans and rice to get the complete amino acids. You don't have to worry about that. You can just, eat a colorful plate, eat enough calories to sustain your normal body weight, and everything will be okay. So this is being recorded on Thursday, and of course the first presidential debate was this week, and I think pretty much every American believes it was a fiasco. Any high school debate team would probably have been booed off the stage had they been debating like our two candidates. But nevertheless, I thought I would do debate issues on the podcast, and I would answer them without yelling at Gretchen or Vinny or Sophie, and we would do it in a nice, calm manner. And of course, I don't have anybody to come back and yell at me, but hey, this is my podcast, it's my party, and I'll tell you my views. So let's start with healthcare. And one of the things that was brought up was Affordable Care Act and the pre-existing conditions, whether that would be, going to be taken away or not. And of course, one person cannot do any of those things. And the question is, should we focus on that? pre-existing condition means that if you had cancer and then you change jobs and you go to get another insurance, or you go to apply for health insurance in general, and they would say, we're not going to cover you because you have the pre-conditioning conditions of cancer, or we're going to cover you, but we're going to cover you at a higher rate because you have pre-existing conditions, because the chances of you needing your healthcare dollars are greater. And obviously insurances are in the business of making money, not providing healthcare. So obviously they want low risk and high return. Well, maybe we should focus on getting rid of the potential pre-existing conditions. And you say, well, yeah, that's easy for you to say, you know, I have cancer, or my child had cancer. And, you know, there are some things that, you know, you had a broken leg or you have a prosthetic hip. There are some things that, you know, that becomes an issue, with health insurance. And, you know, obviously I don't believe anybody should be denied coverage based on their pre-existing conditions. However, I think that they should be addressed, and progress should be made to reverse as many pre-existing conditions as we can. And so if we look at lifestyle diseases, hypertension, hyperlipidemia or high cholesterol, obviously smoking, we know that's a risk factor for all kinds of lifestyle diseases. And even some cancers, again, there's things that can be done to decrease the risk of them coming back. Autoimmune diseases, we can get rid of these, or decrease them, or decrease the severity, or decrease the potential need for us to need hospitalization or lengthy or expensive medications in a lot of instances. And again, and if a child has an illness or a disability, or, you know, there are times when we need to take care of our own. And I'm not denying that any way, shape, or form. I believe that Medicare and Medicaid was founded on that principle, to allow us to take care of our sick and debilitated and elderly. That should happen. But the system has been broken because deals have been made with hospitals and insurance companies that they can keep jacking up the prices and playing accounting games, so that people can't afford to go in and say, okay, I'll pay cash for my appendicitis, or I'll pay cash to have a baby, or, you know, it's not a reasonable price that most people can afford to write a check for or put on a credit card. And so it's got out of hand so bad that, you know, it comes down that we're all afraid not to have insurance, because most events, even a broken leg, can be a financial catastrophic event in some circumstances. But we can do things that we should get credit for being healthy, is my big point. So I think there should be credits for being healthy, and credits for reversing lifestyle diseases. I also think that if doctors do tests that don't change the outcome or don't improve patient outcomes, they should not be reimbursed for their services. So obviously what you do, you get reimbursed for. You see somebody, you can get reimbursed for that. But if you're doing treatments and procedures that don't prolong a patient's life or improve the quality of life, those procedures and they should not be covered. So if people are doing a lot of unnecessary testing, then those procedures should not be reimbursed. And ultimately that would decrease healthcare expenditures. We have a lot of oncology medications that have been put through the system that show very little survival benefit. If any, most don't. They may show tumor shrinkage. They may show a decrease in time to progression, but they haven't done the testing to show survival benefits. They cost thousands and thousands of dollars. I think that, again, these studies need to be done before this is, you know, covered at the rate that which they're charging should actually be covered. So I think that, you know, something needs to be done along those lines. I think people should get credit for being healthy. If you've never made a claim, you have no high blood pressure, you have a normal BMI, you exercise, you should have a lower healthcare premium. again, I think you should be able to earn a lower healthcare premium. And I think that should be upfront. And some health insurance companies are doing that. They're giving credit for steps and walking and so forth. And I think that's good, but I think it could be more. I really do think that if you're able to eliminate medication, you should get a pat on the back and a check in the mail, just like good driving. You know, you get a little reimbursement, and I think that's a good incentive. I also think people need skin in the game. If people don't have skin in the game, they tend not to really focus on preventative measures. I have people that tell me every day that they didn't make a change until they had significant pain. And that's kind of human nature. You know, we like to go along as we go along. We, you know, like to kind of bury our heads in the sand, and everything's okay until it's not. And, you know, you hear the people say all the time, I can't believe it. You know, he was doing great and he fell over in the driveway and he was dead. Well, most people could see it coming on if you just took time to look, but we try to ignore this. And, you know, again, I think there was some mention when people say they, you know, they kind of spit into the wind and say they eat a poor diet, but they feel good. You might feel good today, but you never know what's going to happen tomorrow. And again, you can only outrun a bad diet for so long. There was a question on how was COVID handled? Well, the reality of it is, most of us don't really know the true details of the origin of the SARS coronavirus, whether there was some human manipulation or whether, you know, we don't know the details. I believe there are people out there that do know the details. But for the most part, the medical community and the general public don't know all the nitty-gritty details. But I do know we need to focus on the host. And, you know, as Joe Biden said the other day, here's the deal. Host is what matters. You know, the host is really, and he didn't say host is what matter. He said, here's the deal. But that, you know, if you're strong, like our children and young people, and healthy and your immune system is good, then viruses and flus and bacterial infections, they might make you sick, but for the most part, they're not lethal. We've not experienced the 1918 flu. We've not experienced the plague. Most of that was because of terrible sanitation and all kinds of other things. But we are experiencing, again, a decline in the host health. So our population is, the obesity rate in this country is overwhelming. Diabetes is affecting down into our teenage years. Colon cancer is starting to affect in the 40s because of what we're eating and the processed foods we're eating. In the inflammatory rates of people and the chronic inflammation rate is skyrocketing. So we need to address that as opposed to arguing whether people should be wearing masks or trying to find a vaccine for every little bug that comes around. Because there are always side effects. Just like there's side effects from every medication, there's going to be side effects from these interventions. But there's no side effects to making the host healthy. There's no side effects to getting people's BMI, their weight down to where it should be. There's no side effect to reversing diabetes. There's no side effect into getting hypertension under control. There's no side effect to exercising and becoming healthy. There's no side effect to moving all your body parts. So these are things that we all can do to make the host vessel more healthy. So make America healthy by making the host healthy. That's what we should be focusing on. And we need to spend money on making us a healthy nation, not spend money on health care or sick care, but spend money on incentivizing people to live a more healthy diet. I don't believe in a sin tax, because I think people should be able to ultimately make their choices. I believe in a free society where people can, because businesses will respond. If just like they have in, say, the dairy industry, there's more alternative milks, nut milks, soy milks, oat milks, rice milks, because people are demanding it and they're drinking it. There are many more alternatives to animal products because people are actually buying them. And so when we turn away from sugary, trans fat, high fat items, sodas, people will start making healthy things. A lot of it, people are, you know, there is a lot that people, marketing does to fool people into thinking that they're being healthy, but we have to educate people faster than the marketers can try to fool people. And I think that's something that we really have to address, from the ground up, from pediatric care, before obstetric care, pediatric care, adult care, senior care. We need to make that an emphasis. We need to change our focus from feeding people ice cream as a reward and a treat to celebrating health other ways, and taking things back to healthy foods and making them look exciting, and supporting farmers that grow organic fruit crops and vegetable crops so that we can have healthy alternatives for everybody, and eliminating the food deserts, as opposed to subsidizing, with SNAP dollars, the ability to buy, Krispy Kremes and donuts and these sugar-laden cereals at a reduced cost. So it's education, 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 and then having people vote with their dollars in the grocery store. I think we could change the workplace environment, and so that big corporations and all the way down to local supermarkets and various factories can be given tax credits for a healthy work environment. People should have enough of a lunch break and be made to take it so that they can do some exercise, and they should be able to have healthy options. If they work like in a hospital cafeteria is often a source of fast foods. Need to get the fast foods out of hospitals. We need to give them healthy alternatives they can have there. We need to have an environment where they can exercise. And a lot of it could be really simple, just walking tracks that people could go outside at lunch to go on a walking track. They could have different stations on the walking tracks and the areas around where people can get some exercise. I'm not really one for being inside. I think people should get outside whenever possible. I know people live in places like Minnesota in the middle of the night, or the middle of the winter. That's not going to be an option, so you need inside facilities. But I think outside facilities should be encouraged when the weather is appropriate, so people can get some sunshine and actual vitamin D, and then be encouraged to do so. Not be penalized because they got to woof down their lunch and they can't have time to exercise or walk, at lunchtime. And I think that, again, businesses should be given credits, whether to lower their healthcare premium that they offer for employees, or to be able to be given some sort of tax credits that they can pass on and use for some sort of facilities that can make their workers healthy. PE should be back in schools. Kids are being homeschooled and teleschooled right now, and Zoom schooled, whatever. However, they're learning. They're inside. They're inside on a computer. We need to get people outside. We need to get kids outside. We need to get kids moving. We need to get kids' sports teams back, the rec centers back open, and make sure kids are involved in PE. They need it. They need recess. Not just a once a week PE. So we have to get our kids more active, moving at an early age, so they understand movement, they understand play, and they learn to enjoy it. It'd be nice to be able to get the old, kids doing pickup games in neighborhoods back. When I grew up, we played softball at night. We just pick up kids around the neighborhood. We rode bikes together at night. It would be nice to be able to get that back in a lot of communities, because I think that the socialization for that, as well as the positive physical benefits of kids, is of that would be excellent. I think it's possible that you could have club teams. If you have a Publix and we have stores, Publix here, Winn-Dixie, Walmart. Why not have softball teams that are supermarket teams that you have. Volleyball teams. A lot of that could be encouraged to get those going, as well as the church league. So the team sports with adults through kids would be a great way. Maybe even mixed co-ed sports mixed with families playing. I think there's the sky is endless if we start focusing on that and incentivizing that as opposed to figuring out how we're going to pay for people when they're sick. Obviously, our cities and towns need more friendly bicycle paths, walking paths, so that kids can walk to school safely. I know in my area, there's places where kids are walking on the street at 6 o'clock in the morning, 6:30 right now. It's pitch black. It's very dangerous. So the more safe environments that we have for kids to be able to walk to school or walk to the bus stop, the more parents are going to feel more comfortable in letting them do that. I love it when I see parents walking their kids to the bus stop, especially small kids. Everybody gets a little bit of exercise, get time to talk. I think it's a great idea. So if you have a child and there's a bus stop involved, please walk them to the bus stop and don't drive them. And, you know, employers should make it so that parents can have time to do that. The one last thing I wanted to talk about was your ability to choose. You have the ability to choose whether or not you complete a test. I've heard physicians say, well, they wanted it or they made me do it or we had to do it because of potential lawsuits or risks. So we're screening people or we're doing testing to make sure people feel better, you know, just to check, just to watch. But the reality of it is you should always have the conversation with your physician. Will this test or this procedure make me live better or make me live longer? What will we do with the answer to this test or this procedure that we're a diagnostic procedure? If the answer is we'll do nothing differently, then why do it? Why do an expensive procedure that may have risk involved, such as a diagnostic cardiac catheterization just to look and see, that carries the risk of stroke, heart attack, or death, if you don't want to do anything about it? And the question is, you know, we know from talking last week that there are many studies that unless you're having an unstable cardiac event, electively doing cardiac catheterizations and stent placements is not going to make you live longer or better, but it might ultimately result in a decrease in your survival or your quality of life. And that goes for a lot of tests. Just getting scans because maybe they're deemed non-invasive, that, you know, the trucks that come into town that do the carotids to do the peripheral arteries to see whether you may have blockage. What are you going to do with the answer to that test? Is it going to make you change your diet? Is it going to make you have, if that test is abnormal, you'll have an angiogram that would involve contrast? Would you have the carotid surgery done? Again, when we know that, again, people that are asymptomatic aren't going to live longer better and have an increased risk of stroke. So why pay the money to have these scans done? What are you going to do with the information? You know, when my answer is going to be to people that they need to change their diet, exercise, eat a whole food plant-based diet, regardless if they come into my office healthy and want to be healthy, or they come into my office with chest pain and shortness of breath, I'm still going to give them the same same information, the same recommendations, and I'm going to help them to be able to achieve that. The problem is, you know, so I don't have to do the test to look and see. But I'm going to offer the same treatment or therapy. Just knowing most of the time is not painful enough to motivate somebody to really change, unfortunately. So people may, you know, think that, you know, perhaps they'll change if you knew you had a 70%. You know, you should exercise and eat right. Well, that really is not going to help people to do much in the way of change. So, you know, it's your right as a healthcare recipient to decide whether you want a test or a procedure. And you need to be able to be explained the risk, benefits, alternatives, and what's the science behind looking. Is there truly a benefit from doing a test and a procedure that's going to make you live longer or better, especially if you have no symptoms? And there's not too many tests that I can think of that are make you live longer or better when you're perfectly asymptomatic. Especially if they involve any risk. In conclusion of my one-sided debate tonight, I'd like to suggest that we all try to find something that we have in common. I think there are too many people that like to get us stirred up. media like to get us stirred up. We like to have sides, whether it's a football team or a political team or whatever the side. We spend too much time tearing other people apart by what they don't do or what they do wrong. I think that this world would be better if we started to say, what do we have in common? And most of us have in common that exercise is a good thing. We can debate whether what kind of exercise is best, whether it's running, biking, swimming, just moving, Pilates, yoga, stretching, mobility. We can debate all that, but we all agree that moving is a necessary thing and exercise is a necessary thing to keep our body moving the way it should be. I'd like to put forth that I'd like to see people find their passion, what they like to do, whether it's dance or running or whatever, but I think that helps if you really enjoy it. So the enjoyment factor should be there. But again, we all agree that people should exercise. I think that we all agree that people should eat fruits and vegetables. We might debate on the kind of fruits, but I don't think anybody debates on the vegetables. I guess there's a few out there, but for the most part, we can agree on fruits, some fruits and some vegetables. So we've got that all on our side. And we can all work from there, you know. So when someone asks you about your diet and you say, I'm choosing to eat plant-based, and you can tell them why, but you can also, I also throw in, this is what we have in common. People that eat the standard American diet usually agree that you should have a starch on your plate, you know, which is a potato or a grain, a vegetable, and a piece of meat. So, you know, we really share in common 66% of the plate in most instances. So let's focus on that, and then we differ a little bit, and you can say this is how it's working for me. I'm getting my nutrients, even my calcium and my copper and my zinc, by eating little bits of a lot of different foods, and it's working out for me, and I hope your way works out for you. And again, find things that we have in common as opposed to tearing each other down. I think we need to put why back in the equation so that you can ask why anytime you want. Why? What's your basis for this treatment? What's your basis for this recommendation? Just give me your why. We don't have to argue about it. Just give me your why. And then respect people for their why. But then you can choose, when it affects your body, how you choose to do so. So I hope you enjoyed my one-sided debate. I'll throw a picture up on my website of little baby Sophie. She is very, very cute. And thank you, Ruskin House of Shepherds, for introducing me to all the nuances of German Shepherds. Even though I've had them for a lot of years, I've learned a lot of information over the last several weeks. And I hope to learn more. And I hope to bring Sophie up to be a good canine citizen, both in my office and in class and on the out in public. So thanks for listening, and I'll see you next week.